Welcome to PostView.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Rural Communities Initiative webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference has been recorded Thursday, January 8, 2009. I would now like to turn the conference over to James Butler, Program Specialist. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our first webinar for 2009 for the Rural Communities Initiative webinar. And this particular topic will be on funding and planning rural transportation programs. During the Rural Communities Academy back in September, the challenges of providing reliable and cost-effective transportation was identified by many of the rural communities sites as one of the most critical issues facing rural organizations serving TANF participants. As part of most of the technical assistance plans prepared during the academy, sites expressed interest in learning more about current rural transportation models serving TANF participants. Resources on how you could form partnerships with local transportation stakeholders, and some direction on how to obtain funding for these types of projects. Based on the interest you expressed by the rural sites, we have designed a series of technical assistance events that focus on the issues of rural transportation, the first of which is today's webinar. For today's webinar, we have 6 very knowledgeable speakers from our 4 national agencies that assist rural communities in designing, funding, and implementing rural transportation programs on a regular or daily basis. After all the speakers have presented, we will open the lines up for any of you who have questions or comments. So, without further ado, I have the esteemed pleasure of introducing our first speakers. Our first speakers are Mr. Charles Witkowski and Chris Zillinger from the Community Transportation Association of America. CTAA, I'll probably say later on as we talk about it. Charles comes before you having more than 35 years' experience in the community transportation field, with extensive skills in transit planning, evaluation, management, operations, and financing. He manages CTAA's USDA rural and tribal technical assistance programs, which provide planning assistance and training to help establish, expand, or enhance rural and tribal transit programs, services, and facilities. Through these programs, he has had direct involvement in the development and implementation of transit service and facility projects in over 125 communities in 43 states. Included among these projects are several which have become national models, such as transit development and coordination projects in Lee County, North Carolina, Clarksdale, Mississippi, and Kodak, Alaska. Prior to joining CTAA, Mr. Witkowski was the director of a coordinated rural transit system in Chenango County, New York, where he was responsible for operations, scheduling, dispatching, financial management, marketing, and maintenance of that system. Chris Zillinger is the director of the National Resource Center for Human Service Transportation Coordination, housed within the offices of Community Transportation Association of America. His duties revolve around the center's purpose of providing states and communities with the support they need to better integrate public transportation services with the services and demands of their human services networks. He joined CTAA in 1988. Prior to that, he was employed by the Capital Metropolitan Transit Authority in Austin, Texas, where he supervised the Transit Authority's paratransit reservation and dispatching systems, Welcome, Charles and Chris.
Thank you, James, and welcome to all of you, and good morning, or I guess in some cases it might be morning or afternoon. When we started discussing this webinar, I was wondering at what level it should be presented, and I think we agreed it should be fairly basic. I think a lot of you participating are maybe new to the transportation arena, so if some of this sounds a little bit repetitive, bear with us. I think as we proceed through the webinar and through subsequent training and learning opportunities, it will become a little bit more advanced. We're trying to go to our first slide. I'm not seeing my slide proceed. Patrick, are you seeing the slide move?
Hi, Charlie. This is Patrick. I can see your slide. Your slide has moved.
Okay. For some reason, it's not showing in my screen. So we may have to do this manually. But I will just give you cues when we need to move the slide, then, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about very basic levels, sources of funding for transportation programs. And they fall into two basic categories. If we can go to the next slide, of funding categories. The categories are capital and operating. Capital, as the name suggests, encompasses funding for vehicles and facilities, and that would include associated equipment, computer equipment, radio communication equipment, as well as vehicles. Generally, capital funding is easier to secure than operating funding. There are some more sources out there, some creative, unconventional sources. Generally speaking, it's easier to secure capital funding than operating. It's not an annually recurring expense. Basically, if you're starting a new program, you need to acquire funding to procure the vehicles, and then you would not need to replace them until they break, which might be anywhere from 3 to 5, 6 years later. So even though the expenses are not recurring, you do need to anticipate that they're going to they are going to recur at some point. There is a match requirement for capital sources, and that match generally must be in cash. If you're buying equipment or vehicles from a vendor, in-kind matches don't really work. The matches do need to be in cash. On the operating side, there are more potential sources, more unconventional sources, but it may be more difficult to secure operating funding on a continuing basis. There is a lot of flexibility on providing the match in several of the federal programs, and we'll talk about that just a bit. If we can go to the next slide. Conventional federal funding sources, and these are sources that are available through the Federal Transit Administration. And I'm just going to quickly go through them. Section 5309 is the capital program, and that is available in both urban and rural areas. Sometimes there is an assumption that it's only an urban program, but rural areas can access funds through this program. Before Safety Lou, which is the framework for federal funding, this program, 5309, was entirely earmarked to Congress. And in the past couple of years, it is no longer entirely earmarked. You can certainly secure funds by going to your congressional delegation and requesting earmarks, but the program is becoming a more traditional program where you would access the funds through your State Department of Transportation or a Metropolitan Planning Organization. 5310 is an elderly and disabled capital program. The recipients must be not-for-profit organizations or municipalities that are involved in coordination The vehicles must be used primarily for serving seniors and or persons with disabilities. There is a provision in this program that allows for contracting service, so there is kind of an operating side to this program. 5311 is the rural program, which provides both capital and operating assistance, and that is at the option of the particular state in which you live. 5311C is a set-aside within the rural program that is a tribal transit program. This is a new program. It's now entering the third year. Nationally, this year, there's 12 million available, which really isn't a whole lot considering all the potential tribal transit programs out there. Next year, there will be 15 million available, and the funds can be used for planning, capital, and operating assistance. Section 5316 is the Job Access Reverse Commute Program, or JARC, J-A-R-C. As the name suggests, funds through this program are to be used for employment-related transportation, and the match for that program is 50%. So basically, the federal dollars need to be matched dollar for dollar. The New Freedom Program is a new program, as the name suggests, created through Safety Move. And New Freedom will support services for persons with disabilities that go above and beyond existing programs. So it must support new programs that somehow do not duplicate what might already exist in a community. Okay, I'm able to change my slides now, so I think I'm in control of the slideshow here. Generally, as a result of Safety Move, federal funding levels for transportation have increased over the past several years, but the difficulty that we're seeing is that communities have difficulty securing the local match. However, FTA does provide a lot of flexibility on sources and mechanisms for match. Within the 5316 program, JARC, Job Access Reverse Commute, there is, as I said, a 50% match requirement. However, FTA allows non-Department of Transportation funds to serve as a match. For example, TANF, Welfare to Work funds, can be used as match. Normally, there is a prohibition against using federal funds to match federal funds, but as a result of rule changes within FTA, FTA does basically waive that that restriction, and there is flexibility on using any non-DOT sources to match FTA funding sources. The 5311, which is a rural program, on the operating side, it has a 50% match requirement, and non-DOT contract funds can serve as match. So if you are running a rural transit program, a public transit program, and you might be contracting with a human service agency and receiving funds to provide that service, that contract revenue can serve as a source of match funds. When we talk about collaboration and contracting relationships among organizations, we get into the realm of transportation coordination, which is a principle that's been out there for 25 or 30 years, but increasingly is being embraced by both human service agencies interested in mobility and transportation providers. And coordination can provide opportunities for all of the partners, the providers, agencies, as well as the riders, the users of service. And actually, transportation coordination is a requirement. There is a requirement within the Section 5310, 16, and 17 program that there be a locally derived coordination plan in place. And this locally derived plan is a plan that should be developed with collaboration of stakeholders who have some interest or concern for transportation in a community. And you cannot access funds for these programs unless that plan is in place. Some of the other benefits to coordination, it might allow access to additional revenue sources. It does allow greater efficiency of operations,
better use of resources and more services for users. You might note that we did not include here that coordination would reduce costs. It is sometimes an expectation that transportation coordination will reduce costs for participants, and it doesn't always occur. What we hope is that we can squeeze more efficiency out of the transportation network, but we don't always see decreases in transportation costs across the board. There are some opportunities for existing transportation providers. If you are actually providing service now, you can offer it to others under contract. You might be able to share resources and contract with others to provide the service. Maybe you are a transportation provider, but you don't want to continue that. Maybe someone else is better qualified to do it. So you can be a provider or a consumer of service. Some of the opportunities for human service agencies, they can also contract for the services. By having a transportation professional provide it, the quality of service can be enhanced a bit. And existing agency staff can focus on their primary mission. What we very often see in working with human service agencies, that caseworkers, counselors, human service staff sometimes spend a good part of their day actually providing transportation, driving their clients from appointment to appointment. And that's not really part of their mission, not in their job description, and it's a transportation cost. If the situation can be changed so that somebody else is providing the transportation, those caseworkers, counselors, et cetera, they can do casework counseling focused on their primary mission within the agency. And coordination is not limited to operations. It could include provision of support services such as dispatching, scheduling, management, maintenance and repairs, staff training, staff hiring and screening, or drug and alcohol testing. There are also some opportunities for sharing functions, such as shared purchasing of parts, fuel, supplies, shared vehicle acquisitions, or pooled insurance. And those are some areas where you can actually see some reduced costs by sharing acquisition, sharing the cost of various items. You can bring down unit costs in some areas. But just to note, to insurance, you might be able to achieve some savings by a pooled insurance procurement. However, generally the cost of insuring a vehicle in coordinated service can be higher than the cost of insuring a vehicle that's just being used for a single human service agency. It's basically related to the higher exposure to risk. So this is my second to the last slide. The byword that we encourage you to remember is diversification. Transportation can be funded, supported through a variety of different sources, and we encourage communities to look to a wide variety of funding sources to enhance the sustainability of programs. There are some conventional sources that we talked about. There a lot more unconventional sources that we often get into when we develop transportation plans for communities. So we encourage folks to diversify the funding base. As I think James mentioned in the intro, here at CTA we do have a technical assistance program through which we can provide detailed hands-on assistance to help communities develop, enhance, and grow their transportation programs, and I encourage you to copy down the information on the slide. We also have information on our various technical assistance programs on our website, which is www.ctaa.org. That is my last slide, and Patrick, I'll hand it back to you.
And I'll hand it over to James. Thanks, Charlie.
Patrick, Chris, I'm speaking.
Chris. Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I'll wait for the question and answer period to see what the participants on the call might have as questions. But I wanted to underscore just a few of the points that you know Charlie has made in the slideshow that we've just you know looked and listened to. One is that for folks that are serving the TANF population, we have a lot of experience at our organization working with folks at the state and community level in this. It's really important to try to identify the existing transportation providers if they exist. Now, in a lot of rural areas, they do not exist or do not exist in a way that's adequate to meet program purposes that you may have. But we found in a lot of communities, even when folks didn't initially think so, that there are indeed transportation providers with whom some type of coordination or collaboration is possible. And that's why, you know, much of what, you know, we've just heard from Charlie has been reminding us about coordination, you know, among partners, whether it's agencies or non-governmental organizations or, you know, tribal nations or state agencies or what have you, because it's, as many of us have experienced, especially trying to provide transportation in rural communities, it can be incredibly resource intensive to try to do it yourself. And although there is money there, a lot of that money, Charlie started off the slideshow listing the sources of transit funds for this types of activities. That money does indeed exist, but a lot of it is already subscribed to, and it's not that you can just come knock on Department of Transportation's door and they'll greet you with an open checkbook and say, here it is, go buy a bus and hire some drivers. So the importance of networking and collaboration is very important. One of the other, you know, opportunities we can offer to anyone in this network on this call is that we do also, in partnership with the Federal Transit Administration and its United We Ride program, have a network of coordination ambassadors that can work with you, that are familiar with some of the details in the various states and regions, and can work with you to kind of build some partnerships or relationships to address some of your own local transportation needs. And then folks like Charlie and myself can come in and do additional technical assistance as necessary. So that was one point I wanted to underscore. The other thing, and I know that any time I'm in a presentation where someone's talking about sources of funding, you know, I'm immediately thinking, gee, where do I get that money? Who do I talk to? Who do I call? And almost all of those programs that Charlie listed out of the Federal Transit Administration, while they are federal programs, they are largely managed and administered by state agencies. And so rather than say, here's a convenient list of everyone in the federal government you need to talk to, the key point there is that for most of these programs, and again, working in a TANF environment, you're used to working with state agencies, or should be used to that at least. So again, if you find yourselves for your own local needs or intents or desires or purposes wanting to explore some transportation funds for some of these activities you're trying to address, there will be a state agency, typically a State Department of Transportation's transit office, that you would be wishing to contact. And again, we can put you in contact with the appropriate agencies, or you'll be hearing elsewhere through today's presentation additional resources that can put you in touch with the folks you need to talk to in your state governments. So those are the only two points that I wanted to add to, you know, the PowerPoint show. And with that, those are my kind of prepared remarks. And when the time is appropriate for questions and answers, Charlie and I will both be happy to field those as time and appropriateness permits.
Thank you very much, Charles and Chris. Great job. So we're going to move on now to our next speaker, who will be Dr. Mary Leary from Easter Seals Project Action. Dr. Leary is the Senior Director of Easter Seals Project Action, the National Center on Senior Transportation and Other Transportation Initiatives for Easter Seals. She manages three major cooperative agreements and projects. These three projects are Easter Seal Project Action, that assist communities to further accessible transportation for people with disabilities of all ages, the National Center on Senior Transportation in partnership with the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, that assist communities to further transportation options and resources for older adults, and a special project to further person-centered mobility management to ensure that people have the mobility options so they are able to remain in their community and connect them to whatever human and health services they may require. Before joining Easter Seals, Dr. Leary was employed by DHHS, Administration on Aging, and worked with the United We Ride Program Office to develop field programs and transportation coordination. Welcome, Dr. Leary.
Thank you very, very much, and please, it's Mary. But whenever, after I got my doctorate, people started calling me Dr. Leary, I said, oh my heavens, it's definitely Mary. But it's truly an honor to be able to participate on this call. Thank you so very, very much for the opportunity to speak to all of you today. And I always like to start off with a quote, and this is a quote that is, I think, particularly compelling because it's from Anne Frank, and she said, how wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world. And, you know, Easter Seals Project Action, the National Center on Senior Transportation that we have in partnership with the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, you know, CTAA with their programs and their technical assistance centers that you've just heard about, you know, the RTAP Technical Assistance Center, you know, all of our partners in training and technical assistance cooperative agreements with the Federal Transit Administration, you know, including, of course, the American Public Transportation Association and their work with intelligent transportation systems. We are all striving to make the world a better place for people with disabilities, older adults, persons with limited incomes, their families, youth with disabilities, and really anybody who has perhaps some sort of mobility ability or mobility impairment. We want to make the world just as available and accessible as it is for many other of us that perhaps take you know, getting up in the morning and getting in the car for granted. So it's just really not a delight to be able to talk to you all. I'm going to probably do a little bit of a shift from the excellent discussion that Charlie just gave you from the funding side. We did put together a number of slides, but they're primarily background material. I'm going to focus most specifically on the work that we're doing in human services transportation, particularly our new very exciting project that we're working on in partnership with the Community Transportation Association of America on behalf of the Federal Transit Administration, and that is to develop a person-first or person-centered mobility management plan. And I really want to take this opportunity to kind of, you know, begin some context setting for you all on this whole concept of person-centered mobility, because I think it's very pertinent to the planning activities that you're going to be undergoing in your communities. One thing that I wanted to mention, just to build initially on Charlie's discussion, is, you know, when we look at the funding sources, there's a lot of excitement now, I think, with the fact that FTA did such a phenomenal job in being able to have legislation, and that Congress did in passing legislation that increased human services funding by 40% in safety lieu. It was practically unheard of. I mean, it's incredibly exciting to have that happen. The key stakeholders that you really might want to make sure that you have the opportunity to connect in your local communities, there's kind of about seven of them at the state level. That's the State Department of Motor Vehicles, the State Medicaid Offices, the State Highway Administration, the State Disability Organizations, State Employment, State Education, State Department of Transportation, the State Units on Aging. And, you know, if you have the opportunity to engage with many of these groups, including sometimes state law enforcement, what we're finding when we work with states and local communities around the country to assist them on specific projects that they have to increase transportation options for their clients and for their citizens, it's that amazing things happen when people come together from these various groups. And there have actually been some pretty good studies that have been done where these groups have been surveyed to talk about the joint planning. So if you haven't had a chance to kind of jump in and be a part of that coordinated planning process that Charlie had mentioned that's now institutionalized in Safety Lou, really wanted to suggest that that would be an excellent opportunity for you. And let me just give you some scale for these numbers, and I want to add one more set of numbers. One is JARC is, in 2008 appropriations, that's about $156 million. 5317 New Freedom, that's about $87.5 million. 5310, that's about $126 million. And then there's also the State Units on Aging, Older Americans Act funds, what we call Title III-B. Older Americans Act funds about $70 million in transportation, with a small part of that going to assistive transportation. And then when you look at the state match is about another $130 million. That's about $200 million. And then on top of that, if you add the Medicaid funding, which it's hard to get any really hard and fast numbers, but oftentimes people talk about that in the neighborhood of about $1 billion in funding. you really start to gain an appreciation for the fact that as the General Accounting Office had said, Accountability Office said back in 2004 when United We Ride began, there's a lot of funding to take advantage of. And with the match that that FTA and the Safety Lou legislation allows for now, you can actually use Older Americans Act funds as match for those FTA programs. So I just really wanted to reinforce that for you all. So just to do a little bit of additional context setting, when we look at it from the two groups that we work the most with, and that is older adults and then people with disabilities, just want to kind of key in on a few demographic statistics just from a positioning point of view. First of all, the fact that the over 80 population cohort is one of the fastest growing cohorts is a very, very significant issue for transportation services at a community level. It's a huge need, it's a huge growing need, because oftentimes people in that age bracket probably are not able to drive safely very often. And with the growth that we're expecting to see going from about 5.3 million to 8.9 million between now and 2030, it underscores the importance of developing capacity and infrastructure to support this growing need. It's also an opportunity. You know, Bill Millar, as president of the American Public Transportation Association, often talks about that and reinforcing how important it is that there's an opportunity to build around these needs in the older adult community. I know Dale Marsico from CTAA also talks about that a lot. So all of our leaders, you know, from the Transportation Association side, I know have been talking about this for many, many years, and, you know, many of us have been working with these groups for quite a while. Easterfields has been working on behalf of and supporting people with disabilities and their families for almost 90 years. And we've been honored to have the opportunity to work with the Federal Transit Administration in the Easterfields Project Action Cooperative Agreement for over 20 years now, which kind of brings me to the next slide on trends impacting people with disabilities. What I wanted to really underscore there are two things. One, we have a growing number of people with cognitive limitations and cognitive disabilities. This is really significant because it causes a lot of challenge in terms of being able to navigate the transportation system in communities. Sometimes this is also relating to returning veterans. And this is another group that you can tie into and connect into from a collaboration and a planning point of view, because there's a lot of funding, as you probably may be aware of, that's going to the community to help returning veterans, to help them get jobs, to help them, you know, connect in and transition back into the community, particularly, you know, for those veterans who may have come back from war with a disability. And that cognitive issue is really significant sometimes for them because of the high incidence of traumatic brain injury. The second statistic that we're really concerned about is the poverty rate. 26% poverty rate for people with a severe disability compared to 8% for the non-disabled population. This just shows the importance of making sure that we're working to increase transportation options for people with disabilities and really paying attention to the need to connect them to jobs. And there's another program that CTAA has, JobLink, and that Carolyn Jeske manages, and that is providing a lot of wonderful support and has been for a while, you know, to really increase and connect in with the disability program navigators for services. So what does this all mean in terms of transformation of what's going on today? We see a real transformation. I know I'm preaching to the choir here to all of you, you know, having been at the Department of Health and Human Services myself for about 4 years, where I had the opportunity to start and work with the United We Ride program. You know, you all from the TANF point of view, I'm sure you've seen the shifting, and it's been particularly acute, obviously, for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and for the Administration on Aging to really try to drive this empowerment and independence and dignity strategy to move away from institutional living with, you know, particularly with the Americans with Disabilities Act, with the Olmstead Act. You know, we have a legislative underpinning, too, for that. But all of this has really shifted transportation. Transportation now is far more than, I think, what it perhaps used to be, or perhaps in many ways we wish it always had been this, but it indeed is part of this whole structure to allow people to stay in the communities, and it is intimately connected to economic cost savings that really dwarf the actual cost allocated to transportation services in our public system. You know, once we're able to start to better understand these actual costs for what transportation access can do to reduce depression, because if we can reduce depression, oftentimes when people can no longer drive, they really can plummet into deep depression. That depression then decreases their health status. That decrease in health status then decreases and it increases their health care costs. So there's a lot of work and a lot of discussion being done about that, and of course employment and education opportunities. So this is kind of the impact, and I always like to talk about this, including what we call the squaring of the population, which is, you know, as we move forward, one of the reasons why we hear so much about, you know, the transformation of many of these human services systems, particular systems like Medicaid, as we have an equivalent number of working adults to the number of older adults who have retired. We're really stressing the system because historically you've had a lot more people, and if you look at the demographic charts, you'd have really more like an expansion in the middle, going smaller in the top and smaller in the bottom, but now it's a squaring of the population. So that's really going to make it tough for all of us moving forward. So we talk about, in United We Ride, the family of services, and when Charlie was talking about the various types of funding streams that you have access to, that really kind of ties to the various opportunities and the types of transportation. And I know particularly for rural communities, if you don't already have a public transit system there or a oftentimes there are other transportation systems that might end up being areas that you're going to focus on. There's a lot going on, as an example, for older adults in volunteer driver programs. There's a couple of very interesting models that are being fielded across the United States. One is ITN America, and it's www.itn.com/org. But ITN is a public-private partnership that's really starting to take root, and it's a very interesting model where people sort of bank credits, if you will, by participating as a volunteer driver, and then when they need transportation and services, they can utilize those services through that program. Another is something that the Beverly Foundation has been working on for quite a while, and that is supplemental transportation services. And a lot of these kind of grew out of communities where they didn't have a lot of access to fixed route services. And of course, the other area that we focus a lot on in Eastern Shields Project Action is accessible fixed routes, and that is we have a travel training program to help people with disabilities learn how to utilize the fixed route systems in their communities, and it's really important because it's much better to help someone learn how to use something that's accessible to them on without having to call up and make a reservation than it is to for them to be required by their own eligibility to use ADA complementary paratransit. But where that's something that is necessary for them, that is also a very, very important mode of transportation. And there's a number of other activities going on with driving continuation and then caregiver transportation, and that's another place where the numbers can be pretty staggering, what I would call lost opportunity costs. Some of the numbers, just to share a bit with you, is the MetLife Foundation did a study, and they said for about 7 million family caregivers, the cost for providing the cost to communities, to businesses, if you will, that were being lost was in the neighborhood of $17 to $33 billion. But an even more compelling study is that was just updated by AARP. They issued the study in 2007 and then updated it for 2008, and it's growing, and it's called Valuing the Invaluable. That study talks about an unpaid cost of 34 million family caregivers providing care from $350 billion to $375 billion. So, you know, when we really look at this and we look at all these at the different options and the different family of services, there really is an opportunity here to not just talk about the actual funding sources, but also talk about what types of dollars can you save in your community by being able to harness transportation systems. And there are a number of states, South Carolina is one that's doing a lot with something called the Data Cube, where they're gathering person-centered information that helps them to justify and develop strategies to increase transportation options in the community by talking about some of these various cost-saving strategies. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to set some of this context for you. Now what I'd like to do is kind of move past some of these United We Ride slides. I would just say that this slide here, the confusing array of programs and funding, is sort of a famous slide made famous by Bryna Helfer that you may know. Bryna was over at the Federal Transit Administration kind of driving the United We Ride effort initially, and That person in the middle with all the question marks, that's Joe Ryder. And poor Joe Ryder, what a confusing array of systems that Joe Ryder is trying to gain access to. And so one of the things that also you can spend time doing is looking at ways to streamline access to transportation options, and that's why I kind of want to spend a little bit of time talking about mobility management. There was such a good discussion on transportation coordination. I'm not going to go into that, but just to underscore this slide here, this is FTA's vision of the one vision, one call. That's why there's a lot of work going on in something called Mobility Services for All Americans that talks about how to utilize information technology to increase accessibility to information on transportation options that might exist in the community. Now I'm going to kind of jump ahead to the slide, but to really start talking about mobility management. And one thing I wanted to mention is there is right now, it closes on the end of, I think in about another 30 days, the Federal Transit Administration has grants for building mobility management and transportation capacity in the human services. These are very significant grants, and it can be upwards of about $100,000 that states and communities can get. And so I really, really suggest everyone, might want to take a look at that. Because one of the neat things about mobility management is there's flexibility now with some of the funds that used to be used for capital investment only, and now you can use them for short-term management activities, one of which is this area of mobility management. And let me kind of explain what is mobility management, because I know you're probably going to hear the term a lot. Mobility management, we think, is probably best explained by the process required. And this is a planning process, and I'm focusing primarily on this planning side, that if you're not familiar with something called the Framework for Action, I would go to www.unitedweride.gov and download the Framework for Action Guide. Framework for Action is a planning process that has generated tremendous results, and it's basically getting all the right people around the table and doing what many of us would call a traditional strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and issues, threats, or whatever you want to call that last term. Some people call it SWOT. I don't like the threats piece of it. But basically what you want to do is do an assessment in your community first of what are the needs of your citizens, of your particular clients, of your families. Then what are the transportation services that they need? Then you take a look and assess and catalog the community resources that are available. This sounds simple, but you'd be surprised on how many communities actually don't have that. But what you'd really want, hopefully, is to be able to go to one place and download a list of all the transportation options and how to access those options. And we, all of the technical assistance centers, have access to templates that we can provide on that. There are a number of resources that are available. And Eastern Coast Project Action has a clearinghouse where we have over 100 materials that you can use. And we will send them out at no charge to you. You can order 100 of them. You can run a training program. You know, we shipped out almost 100,000 materials last year, and we probably average sending out to anywhere between about 60 to 100 organizations a month. So we get a lot of requests, and we're really delighted to fill those requests. And then when you look at this planning process, assess, and it's kind of connecting the two sides together. You look at what the person needs, and then you look at what's available, and then look at what do we need to do to help that person use the resources that are in the community. And then in the beginning, when I talked about those various groups at the state level and then oftentimes at the community level, it's connecting those access points. We sort of have a dream of, wouldn't it be wonderful if every time somebody walks into a Department of Motor Vehicles and they walk out not being able to drive, that not only do they not feel like the world has just been lost to them, but perhaps they have in their hands a brochure that guides them to the other resources. Perhaps they have talked to a very nice person there that has helped redefine for them what the concept of mobility means. Perhaps they're not walking out depressed and willing to kill themselves like a man in Iowa did when he told one of his human services providers, if I can't drive anymore, I don't want to live. And he went home and shot himself. These are things we don't want to happen. And, you know, I think particularly in rural communities, it's particularly acute, and we know these folks, we know they have to have resources, we know they have to have answers. And so in this person-centered mobility management plan that we're putting together for FTA, and we have issued our first draft that's now at FTA for review, we currently are recommending 5 major goals. 1, educating community leaders. 2, assessing existing options. 3, ensuring access to mobility services. 4, expanding community awareness. with the new and enhanced projects that are being implemented? And last, and very importantly, ensuring sustainability of this new infrastructure and these new goals. And many communities are fielding mobility managers. Wisconsin has fielded like over 40 mobility managers using New Freedom Initiative funding. And I know Dave's going to talk a lot more about New Freedom because he's just put some wonderful information on the website, so I won't go into much more information on that because I don't want to take away what Dave is going to be talking about. But I guess my message is there's lots of opportunities for everyone. This is the National Resource Center that Chris Eilinger supports. We always like to talk about this center. Very, very strong partner with CTAA, with the NRC, and it's a very important part of the whole United We Ride effort, particularly the long-term view of it. And this tells you a little bit about Easter Seals and our history. What I'd like to do, though, is kind of go to our mission. Our mission with Easter Seals Project Actions is noted there, but at the end of the day, it's about transportation for everyone, everywhere, whenever they need it, to facilitate inclusive, independent living in the community. We do four major activities. We do training events, technical assistance, outreach, and applied research. We do the same four functions in our National Center for Senior Transportation, and one of the things I really wanted to suggest is please take a moment to go to our Easter Seals website, and that website is www.projectaction.org. That's Easter Seals Project Action. Go to the top right-hand corner. There's something that says user profile. If you could take a moment to create a user profile, that way every time we have a new training program, as an example right now, we've got about six different training distance learning events are going to be happening over the next 60 days. We also have a Mobility Planning Services Institute that we're going to be fielding the senior transportation-oriented one in June 15th to 18th, and then the Accessible Community Transportation Institute primarily focusing on pulling together those stakeholders, focusing on the disability community and disability transportation options for people with disabilities in the community, and that's July 12th to 15th. We typically fund about 22 teams to come together and do joint planning. And then and if you take a moment to register on one of these two sites, you will get our updates whenever we send out an e-news or a blurb on any of our upcoming activities, such as we just finished a webinar on trip planning. We have an audio conference on transportation by the numbers, which helps you figure out, and that's coming up, by the way, because this might be something you might want to do on January 22nd and 29th. And we actually have a CD that's available that helps you kind of understand what the different costs are for planning transportation services in your community. We also have, there's another discussion on rural transportation startup and expansion of transportation services in rural areas. That's distance learning event on February 10th. There's a lot more. So if you take a moment and look at our website and build a profile, then we really look forward to serving you and seeing how we can assist you in a more targeted fashion in your work. And with that, I turn it back to you, and thank you so very, very much, Patrick, for the invitation and for this opportunity to talk to everyone today.
Thank you so much, Mary. Great information. We're going to go ahead and move to our next speaker, who will be David Snyder from the Federal Transit Administration. David works as the program specialist for the elderly individuals and individuals with disabilities, job access, and reverse commute, JARC, as Charles mentioned earlier, and New Freedom Grant programs. Part of his duties are to provide guidance and technical assistance to FTA staff, grantees, and stakeholders on implementing the programs and conducts evaluations on the effectiveness of the programs. David joined FTA in 2003 as a Presidential Management Fellow and spent 4 years with the agency's Office of Civil Rights prior to joining the FTA Office of Transit Programs in 2007. Welcome, David.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity, and thank you also to my colleagues at Easter Seals and CTAA and National RTAP for their work and for being such great ambassadors of the initiatives and programs that we are all working together on. I was asked to talk specifically about the Job Access and Reverse Commute program. So my presentation is limited to information on that program primarily. We administer a wide range of grant programs at FTA, but it's the JARC program that was designed specifically to try to meet the transportation needs of TANF recipients. And we've had a long-standing relationship between the JARC program and the TANF program. At one point, in the early years of the JARC program, over half of the JARC services that were in operation were matched with dollars from the TANF program. And the FTA and HHS issued joint guidance on working together. So I'm always happy to talk to folks that are working with TANF populations, and I'm going to encourage folks who are the TANF administrators to reach out to the transportation providers and other stakeholders at the state level and local level. As I go through this, I'll try to skip over some of the things that may be redundant at this point in the presentation and try to emphasize some things that I think they're emphasizing. The goal of the JARC program is to help welfare recipients and other low-income individuals travel to job sites, as well as employment-related activities such as job training and child care. JARC funds can also be used to improve what's known as reverse commute transportation for the public at large. And the notion behind reverse commute transportation is traditionally, in a traditional transportation system in a city, people would be living in the suburbs and maybe driving to a park-and-ride lot and then taking a train into the downtown, if you're talking about a large city. Well, now that many jobs and other opportunities are located in the suburbs, reverse commute will allow people in the suburbs to travel to suburban locations from downtown areas. The JARC program was established in response to the welfare reform legislation that was passed in 1996, and that legislation increased pressure for welfare recipients to find employment. And it became obvious to folks in the transportation world that in order to find a job and to maintain a job, you're going to need to have transportation to that job. And yet there were transportation barriers that are preventing low-income individuals from finding and maintaining employment. Two-thirds of the new jobs are in the suburbs, but three out of four welfare recipients live in rural areas or central cities, and many recipients don't own reliable vehicles. And also many entry-level jobs require weekend or evening hours in areas that may not be well-served by existing transit routes, or may be well-served, may be served by an existing transit route, but because you have to take multiple vehicles and multiple transfers, the trip could, you know, be 2 hours one way and 2 hours the next way, which is not a sustainable commute for most people. So the JARC program was designed to enhance public transportation services beyond what's currently provided at the local level to help meet these job access needs and help reduce these barriers. Initially, the JARC program was a discretionary program where people submitted an application to FTA, and FTA staff selected recipients. Gradually, over time, starting around 2000, more and more of the funds were earmarked by Congress. So members of Congress selected specific programs that they wanted to fund and instructed FTA to fund those programs. A change came in 2005 when our legislation got reauthorized, and the JARC program is converted from a discretionary program to a formula program. So now each state gets an allocation of money based on the number of low-income individuals within the state. And there's a separate allocation provided to metropolitan areas with populations over 200,000. And our program is due to be reauthorized in 2009. In terms of the overall funding levels, the program started with about $60 million in 2000, and it's grown incrementally to where in 2009, $165 million has been authorized for the program. 60% of the apportionment every year goes to areas with populations of 200,000 people or more. 20% goes to states to use in cities with populations between 50 and 199,000 people. And 20% goes to states for uses in areas with populations under 50,000. When you get down to an individual state's apportionment, the dollar amounts aren't relatively large as far as federal government programs are concerned. So, for example, Florida last year received $901,000. Pennsylvania received $1.1 million. And these are numbers for their rural apportionment. Arizona received about $560,000. North Dakota received $143,000. I think the point to keep in mind, though, is that the JARC program is not out there to help an agency establish a brand new transit system. It's out to supplant the enhance the existing public transit services. And the other thing to keep in mind is that the JARC funds can be matched by other federal government programs as well as local government programs. So that we hope that the JARC program provides some seed money for other programs and for coordinated planning so people are working together and funding programs jointly. previous speakers have mentioned other funding sources. If you have more detailed questions about any of these funding sources, feel free to give me a call or to call one of our regional offices who can provide you with more details about eligible activities for some of these other sources of funds. In terms of how the money gets out there from Congress to the individual local organizations, the way it works is something like this. Once Congress appropriates funds every year, and once they do, the Federal Transit Administration issues an apportionment notice, and that notice lists how much money is available to rural areas in each state. Once we publish the apportionment notice, there is a coordinated planning process, which isn't really triggered by the apportionment notice. It's something that has been going on for the past several years since Safety Lou required it. And the coordinated planning process, as folks have alluded to before, is a collaborative effort between local transit agencies and human service agencies and members of the public, and it identifies the transportation needs of low-income persons, as well as people with disabilities and older adults, the existing resources available, gaps in services, and it identifies priorities to fill those gaps. And coordinated plans can be developed at the state level for all rural areas in the state, or they can be developed within specific rural planning areas if the state has divided its rural areas into planning areas. It'll vary from state to state. Coordinated plans need to be revised at least once every 4 years. Most states have already developed their coordinated plans, but if you haven't had the opportunity to participate in the coordinated planning process, you still have that opportunity because it's an ongoing process and the plans will need to be revised and taken a look at. Once the priorities for specific job access projects have been documented in the plan, the state holds a competition for projects that address those priorities and selects what local agencies at the local level will receive funds. And local recipients can be public agencies, they can be private nonprofit agencies, or they can be private for-profit providers of public transportation. And the state can hold a competitive selection annually or at intervals, but not to exceed 3 years. Once the state has selected what projects it wants to fund, it applies to FTA for its apportionment. We review the application to make sure the activities that they want to fund are eligible under the JARC program, and then we obligate the funds. And then once the funds have been obligated, the state transfers the funds to a local provider and monitors the provider to ensure that the activities of the grant are being accomplished. In terms of what activities are eligible under the JARC program, one of the more traditional things that we have funded under the JARC program is expanding fixed route or demand responsive van service in situations where there is, say, a small town that has unlimited fixed route service, maybe two or three routes, and it goes maybe to the edge of town. And, you imagine a situation where there's an industrial park or other job site that it has located, you know, maybe a mile or two from the end point of the transit route. Well, JARC funds could be used to extend that route to the employment site. Another activity that has been funded by the JARC program are transportation that employers arrange to pick up their employees and shuttle them back and forth to work. Another JARC eligible activity is to fund late night service that extends the hours of a transit system, say, from 7 p.m. when they normally would stop to midnight in order to allow people who work later hours to come home from work. Another activity is ride-sharing or carpooling programs. Often these are administered by nonprofit organizations to help people that don't have their own car share transportation. Another JARC program that has been implemented to some extent around the country are automobile loan programs. You can use JARC money to fund a loan so that people can purchase an automobile at a lower interest rate than they might ordinarily be able to receive. And once they purchase the automobile, they are required to use it in a ride-sharing program. One of the other activities I wanted to mention are voucher programs. In a lot of places, you may have some limited fixed route or demand-responsive transit service, and it's just not feasible to extend that fixed route service, say, till 11 o'clock or midnight, as in my previous example. Well, one way to meet the transportation needs of people that need transportation during those times of day would be to set up a program so that an individual has a voucher, and they can use that voucher on a local taxi system or on a local nonprofit's van or on a local ride-sharing program. So they are connected with a ride in a time or during a day that the existing, more traditional transit just isn't available. And then the last thing which has been touched on already is mobility management. We're seeing a growing number of people that are recipients of JARC funds use JARC money for mobility management. One of the advantages of mobility management is you can start up projects with a relatively small amount of money, because you're not using the money to build a new station or buy lots of vehicles. What you're using it for are coordination activities, things like establishing a call center that coordinates multiple services, and you can use it to pay for people to serve as travel navigators, which serve as travel agents, to help people identify what their travel needs are, but also what their what options they have in the community. Because of our limited time, I won't go into much more detail about mobility management, except to say that there's a lot of information about mobility management on our website and on the UnitedRe website as well. In terms of collaboration, if you have not reached out to the transit agencies or departments of transportation at the state or local level, we encourage you to. If you're having difficulties doing it, you can call me or call our regional staff or call some of the UnitedRe Ride ambassadors, and we can brainstorm on ways to break some bottlenecks. This slide identifies three opportunities for collaboration. One is to share knowledge, to be at the table at the coordinated planning process so that other stakeholders in your area can learn about the needs of the clients that you serve, and you can learn about some of the resources that are there. There is an opportunity to pool financial resources, as I mentioned. TANF funds can be used to match DART dollars for transportation projects that serve your clients. And then if you're operating vehicles or other services, there's opportunities to take a look at avoiding duplication and streamlining those services. In terms of the results of the program, you know, the JARC program has been around since 1998, and over time we've developed evaluations and studies of the program, and we're continuing to take a look and evaluate the program. I have some of the results of the reports that we've been developing in recent years, and I just want to highlight a few facts. In 2006, JARC services provided access to about 43.4 million jobs, including about 21 million jobs that we would characterize as low-wage jobs. When we go out and measure the travel times between going from point A to point B on a JARC service versus the existing transit service out there or other modes, JARC services generally reduce travel times for users, which is important. When we go out and talk to users of the services and ask them to rate the importance of the service, most users say that they are very important to them. And we've gone out, we've done some cost-effectiveness studies, and it looks like the JARC services that we surveyed are relatively cost-effective compared to other transit services, and as well as cost-effective compared to other programs that seek to assist low-income persons. And we've also had some positive results when we go out and compare the cost of the services to the benefits of the services. When you're going out and you're reducing transportation barriers and you're helping someone who was unemployed get a job, or you're helping someone who had a lower-paying job get a higher-paying job, or you're helping someone who was on public assistance get off public assistance, there are a wide range of benefits that can be achieved through that. And so we are continually interested in trying to quantify those benefits so that we can demonstrate the importance of transportation that gets people to work on a reliable basis and off public assistance. There's the benefits to the users, and there's benefits to members of the public at large. That's my presentation, essentially. We have some technical assistance resources and some links here. And then I have my contact information is here. And I encourage folks to contact me or my colleagues on the call and our regional offices as well. Thanks.
Thank you so much, David. And in the essence of time, we're going to go ahead and move on to our last two speakers for today's webinar. Our next speakers are Nicole Goldsmith and Robert Tassinari from the National Rural Transit Assistance Program, and I'm going to refer to it as RTAP. Nicole is the Executive Director of RTAP and is responsible for coordinating interactions between the Federal Transit Administration, RTAP state managers, national and state partners. Nicole comes before you with extensive experience specifically in program management, consortium building, and rural transportation programs, and policies and regulations. Robert serves as the senior technical manager. He is responsible for the financial administration and all technical aspects of the national RTAP. This includes data collection, tracking and outcome measurements, and management of RTAP resource center staff. Robert is also the program manager of the Massachusetts Statewide Access to Jobs Initiative under contract with the Massachusetts Department of Transitional Assistance, DTA. He has many years of experience in managing private shuttle bus services and the implementation of other transportation system management programs. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. My role will be to simply give a quick overview of the National RTAP program, and then I'll turn it over to my colleague, Rob Tassinari, to speak about the 5311 program. We're pleased to represent National RTAP that has a 20-year history. Our mission, of course, is to improve the mobility of rural and small urban as well as tribal communities with populations under 50,000. The founders recognized that transit drivers, dispatchers, workers, managers, and board members needed certain skills and knowledge to provide quality service to their customers across large service areas. The type of technical assistance that comes from the National RTAP program includes everything from surveys and reports, best practices, research, scholarships, a resource center, as well as a peer network. The National RTAP is directed through a national review board who, among many duties, their primary one is to help direct and develop the subject matter for the training materials and DVDs that you will find in our resource center. The type of programs that we offer and outreach include information delivery through the resource center, an online community for RTAP managers and boards to utilize message boards, webinars, and a place in general for the rural community to talk about the types of challenges that they face, whether it be through funding or training or specific regulations that you might find that are troublesome in our community. In addition, on our end, we'll be tracking program utilization elements by category and issues. Our goal is to conduct research through our RTAP managers. We have one in each one of the 50 states. We've begun a dialogue to make certain that the information that comes out of National RTAP is indeed relevant and current and represents your needs. In addition, we look to reestablish a national dialogue regarding overall impact. We also service Native American tribes. The type of things that we will be working on this particular year include toolkits, scheduling and dispatch module, insurance primer, a tutorial focused on tribal transit, expanding the Rural Technical Resource and Communication Center, also known as RTRAC. Now I'm going to turn our program over to Rob Tassinari, who is our Senior Technical Manager, and he will talk about the 5311 program. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Hi to everybody. Happy New Year. I was going to go into detail on the 5311 program, but Charles did a pretty good job of explaining most of the points about it, so I'm just going to go briefly through it, given the time. I think it's, at least on the East Coast, it's about almost 4 o'clock. The 5311 program is specific to rural or non-urban transportation. It's a formula grant. That means that the federal government allocates funding to states based on their rural population, as well as the area of the particular state, and then from the state, they are supposed to draft up a plan of action on how to allocate the funding to the sub-recipients. The 5311 program is specific to rural transit. It doesn't matter who the recipient or the actual user of the service is. It's really the general public. So if a person is on receiving state assistance, they'd be eligible to use the service that's being provided through these funding sources. Of course, it's really to enable people to access health care, education, employment, public service, as well as access recreation or anything. Part of the 5311 does require some funding to go to intercity bus transportation if there's a need for additional funding for that, as well as in the event that there are private vendors out there and not public vendors, that the FTA would like to see the public transportation providers included in any additional services that are provided through the funding. And I'm sorry, our screens, for whatever reason, are coming in like this. The state and local governments are eligible recipients, nonprofit organizations, Indian tribes and groups, as well as public transportation operators are eligible to receive funding. They would have to provide proposals to the state and work with the state in order to access these funds. You can use the funding for capital, operating capital. It's an 80-20 match. For operating, it's a 50-50 match. Some of the funding that does go to the state is used for administrative costs that the state may have. Now, there is another section of funding called 5311C, and that's for a tribal transit program. In order to be a recipient of this, you'd have to be a federally recognized Indian tribe. And in the information that Patrick had sent me, the three Indian tribes, that the one from California, from Arizona, as well as from Wisconsin, they are actually all federally recognized tribes. Not sure whether they're on the line on this webinar or whether they've tried to access this funding, but in the event that you have not, you are eligible to access this funding. And, of course, the purpose for the C funding is the same as the 5311 funding. And I apologize once again, the slides are going a little slow. Your next steps in the event that you're interested in accessing these funds would certainly be to contact your state RTAP manager. If you don't know who your state RTAP manager is, you can go on to our website, nationalrtap.com, /state, and you'll be able to see a map of the United States. Click on your state, and it will list out the state's name, and that actually is nationalrtap.org. If you are looking to access the 5311C program, you can certainly go through your state RTAP, because there is funding within the 5311 specific for tribe, as well as this special 5311 where you can go directly to the FTA, and you could contact Lorna Wilson at FTA, and her number's there. And, of course, if you have any other questions, you can contact us at National RTAP. Our resource center number is 888-589-6821. I think that's all for my slides. I just want to mention we are having a webinar that will be coming up on Monday, the 12th. If you want to go to our website, you'll be able to sign up. It has to do with human resources. And this webinar will be how to investigate an investigation of misconduct. And that's it for me.
Thank you so much, Rob and Nicole. Before we open the lines up for questions or comments, are there any additional comments from any of today's speakers? Okay, Patrick, if you can have the operator open the lines up for questions and comments, please.
Thank you, James. Operator, you're ready for questions now.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift up your handset before entering your request. Once again, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. One moment, please. As a reminder, to register for a question, press the 1 followed by the 4. There appear to be no questions from the phone lines. Please proceed.
Okay, I'll go ahead and move towards closing remarks then. Just want to thank everyone who joined us on this webinar. Thank you to Charles, Chris, Mary, David, Nicole, and Robert for sharing your knowledge and expertise on funding rural transportation projects and initiatives. Last but not least, the staff at ICF International, who were very instrumental in pulling this webinar together in terms of all the logistics.
Pardon for the interruption, sir. We do have a question from the phone line.
Sure.
From the line of Kathy Manning, please proceed with your question.
Hi, I'm in the state of California, and I had a rural transit program that we've been trying to work on. So I guess my question would be, if we wanted to develop several different sources, and we do have a rural transit here, would it be best that we talk with them about how to access these funds, or if they're accessing these funds already for rural transit, or could we just contact the RTAP folks directly to talk about our program?
Hi, this is Nicole. You can actually do both. Beginning a dialogue is absolutely important, but yes, you can go directly to your RTAP manager, and they are the first point of contact on giving information and accessing who's connected throughout your state.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
And we have no further questions from the phone lines.
Okay, thank you. Also, in closing, I'd like to also mention that the PowerPoint presentation and an audio recording from today's webinar will be made available for everyone within the next few weeks. Also, feel free to contact me or anyone from the Rural Communities Initiative team if you have any further questions. So, on behalf of the Office of Family Assistance, the Technical Assistance Branch, under the leadership of Lisa Washington Thomas, I thank you all very much for joining us, and have a pleasant day.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation, and ask that you please disconnect your lines.